Well, if we think about the Exodus and what happened at that time, I mean, a lot happened. You find even before the Exodus, the plagues had hit Egypt, and they hit Egypt hard. It hit some of the sons of Israel hard initially. River of blood, the frogs, the swarms of lice and gnats. Beyond that, only the Egyptians suffered, the flies, the diseases on the cattle, the boils, sores on each man and animal, the destruction of the crops and the cattle by hail, the destruction of crops by locusts. They basically came through and finished off what crop or what nutrients there were, what plants there were left. The darkness came, and then the death of the firstborn came. And then they finally said, "We've had enough. Get out." And Yahweh knew exactly what he was doing when he did all of this. And in fact, when you look back at the plagues that were presented, that came about, they were all against their pagan deities. Egypt was full of pagan deities. Their main one was the sun. But they had Hapi, which is the spirit of the Nile. They referred to it as the guardian of the Nile. They had Heqt, H-E-Q-T, which is a form of a frog. And they had, of course, Egyptian priests and these type of things. As I'm looking here in Ryrie's Study Bible, it goes over a number of these things. But I don't want to spend too much time with that. What I do want to look at today is the Exodus, the actual Exodus. And when you look at that, you have to go back to Exodus chapter 12. And I want to spend some time in this, in that there is a lot to review, a lot to look at and understand. And it's not as easy as one might think it would be. You know, we would think, well, we should be able to just read through it and get the gist of it. Well, I think the overall is brought forth, but some of the details are not necessarily brought forth unless you look at the original wording. And I remember being here a number of years back, and we had a Bible study, and I think it was Elder Don Mansager that spoke up, and he said, what does this particular wording here, what is that in the Hebrew? And I was looking in Strong's at the time and had actually written down a Reb. And I was wrong. And I spoke up, I said, "It's a Reb." And he kind of looked at me like, And then it was brought out that it was Ben Ha'arbim. And so, I mean, it's a learning process. But the interesting thing about it is I made the same mistake this morning. Because what I decided to do is, because since there is so much here in Exodus 12, I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll just plan to go ahead and go through this without any notes on the side, without any article, because there's enough here to take up the time today and to go through. But I had to end up going back in one spot here, for example, Exodus. Well, this isn't the actual verse that I went into to correct. Oh, it was Numbers 9 and verse 11. There are about 11 places where Strong's gives a Reb for Ben Ha'arbim, which is a idiomatic phrase for between the evenings. Basically, when you have a Reb, which is like the sun setting, which we would have here in the West, when that sun goes down, it's Bo, that's sunset. So Bo means the sun has gone down. But then there's still light. And that's the Ben Ha'arbim. And it lasts for about an hour, hour and a half, you know, depending on where you're at. But that's the time that the Passover lamb was to be killed. And there's a number of scriptures that you can look at to prove this point. We don't need to look at all of them. But we might look at, for example, Exodus chapter 30. Exodus chapter 30 and verse 8. Now here they are, they're turning the lamps, they're going to go ahead and light them. And it says, and when Aaron trims the lamps at twilight, that word, not Areb, as Strong's would have it, but it's Ben Ha Arbim. And when Aaron trims the lamps at twilight, he shall burn incense, and there shall be a perpetual incense before Yahweh throughout your generations. Going back up, we find Aaron shall burn fragrance and incense, and he shall burn it every morning when he trims the lamps. And, of course, olive oil was used. But when would those lamps have been lit? They didn't have a great quantity of olive oil, so they would have used it sparingly. They would have used it as it was needed. And the point being here is the time of the day would have been, there would have been enough light to see, but they needed to get it lit before complete darkness. Complete darkness is Layla in the Hebrew. And you can actually combine a word with that and have midnight, as we know today. And what we understand is the middle of the night. And it's beyond when the sun sets. It's going into the night. And so we can take a look at some of these things, but I wanted to bring that out. And I thought I was going to have to come here and correct myself on the last message because I thought, oh, I must have used the wrong wording. I think it was Deuteronomy 16 and verse 6. But that is a reb there, and it is bow, and it helps set the timing for the Passover. In fact, we can look at Deuteronomy 16, and eventually we'll get to Exodus 12. But some of these are worthwhile to go to and to look and to know what's there. I actually did have to go back because I wrote down a reb in here, but then I went back, crossed it out, put Ben Ha Arbim, and then ended up going back, crossing out Ben Ha Arbim, and putting a reb. I'm not perfect. And so this is why we really need to have Bible studies. We need to have these things gone over again and again and again, once a year at least. So here we have Deuteronomy 16:6. This says, at the place where Yahweh your Elohim chooses to establish his name, you shall sacrifice a Passover at the evening at sunset at the time you came out of Egypt. Now, we can go back and look at what time that was, but, you know, Moses and Aaron, before the Pharaoh there, Pharaoh said, get out. You know, it was during the night. In fact, you read in Deuteronomy 16, verse 1, it says that Yahweh brought them out of Egypt by night. So again, it's like putting some pieces of puzzle together and seeing the picture. But here in Deuteronomy 16:6, it says, you shall sacrifice Passover at evening at sunset at the time you came out of Egypt. So it goes past the sunset. It goes into Ben Ha Arbim and beyond that sunset. And that's the point. What's happening today is you do see the tradition of Jews keeping the Passover, and this was even back at Messiah's time, and maybe we can get into that at another time. There's going to be enough here in the Old Testament, but the Jews today, for the majority, they're keeping the Ben Ha Arbim. They interpret that to be mid-afternoon to sunset, and it's incorrect when you look at all the scriptures that are given where Ben Ha Arbim are. You find that and when you look at the other words, the Areb and Bo, you can see clearly that that Ben Ha Arbim is after the sun sets, but before complete darkness comes. That's another word, that's Layla. And then you get into another word called Bokor, which is sunrise. And so all of these words play a role in discovering and determining what is said. But let's go back to Exodus 12. Exodus 12 and verse 1. Now Yahweh said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, this month shall be the beginning of months for you. It is to be the first month of the year to you. And as we've already seen, some of the translators recognize this as, hey, this is new. They're not to be keeping the calendar that Egypt was keeping, the sun calendar that they had, even though they added 5 days to it to try to make it correct. It still ended up being not accurate long term. And so that was the problem with the calendars from Babylon into Egypt and beyond. But we find here that here is a new month, a new year. And though Abib isn't mentioned here, it is in Exodus 13:4 and also 9:31. But in verse 3 it says, "Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month they are each to take a lamb for themselves according to their father's household, a lamb for each household. Now if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his neighbor nearest to his house are to take one according to the number of persons in them. According to what each man should eat, you are to divide the lamb." So no waste, going overboard with this. In verse 5, "Your lamb shall be an unblemished male, a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats." So you can actually have a goat for the Passover back at this time. That was authorized. And having a goat, you may have been poor, but you had a goat still, and so you could use and utilize that. It was accepted. But here we find that, you know, going back to verse 3, on the 10th of this month, they are to each take one of these. And then basically they had it. Children would have been able to have played with it. It would have been near. And you know, imagine there's some attachment that could have taken place. Because, I mean, if you've ever seen a little sheep, even a little goat, they're cute. I mean, they have an appeal to them. And you hate to kill anything, but, you know, this was to be done. Verse 6, "You shall keep it until the 14th day." So they had it for 4 days, basically. "Of the same month, then the whole congregation," or the whole assembly of the congregation, rather, "of Israel is to kill it at twilight. Ben ha arbim." It's given the very first word that could be given is the ben ha arbim, or that phrase, between the evenings. Or son of the evenings, actually, transliterating it. But we find here that it's the congregation of Israel. Is that the Jews? Is that only the Jews? No. But many today will say, oh, that's the Jews. We're talking about the 12 tribes of Israel. Judah is just one tribe. So we're talking all of Israel. And, of course, we'll see that this is not just for Israel, but for those that will join with Israel. In verse 7, it says, "Moreover, they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the house in which they eat it." So they were to eat it in the house. They would put the blood up on the top, on the sides. They wouldn't put it on the bottom, and that wouldn't be a good thing to do, because you don't want to trample that blood. Just as in the New Testament, you don't want to do that. In verse 8, it says, "They shall eat the flesh that same night, roasted with fire, and they shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs." So they were to do it a certain way. Now this word night here is Layla, and it is a word that we find being used throughout Exodus 12 here. At least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I've got them marked here, at least 5 times. So we know the timing. We know that it's going into the 14th, at the beginning of the 14th. And, you know, to know when a day begins and ends is critical to understanding when this time period is. A sunset starts a new day. The next sunset ends that day, but starts another day. And it just goes, it's like going back to Genesis, where we find the creation account. It's from evening to evening. And we understand that the sun has to go all the way down, bow, so it's sunset to sunset. But it could be translated evening to evening. So in verse 8, they shall eat the flesh that same night, roasted with fire, and they shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. So the timing of this, I mean, they would have wanted to have accomplished this in a fairly orderly and quick manner. I mean, they knew a death angel was coming. I mean, how important would this be? It would be very important. In verse 9 it says, "Do not eat any of it raw or boiled at all with water, but roast it with fire, both its head and its legs, along with its entrails." Now, there have been those that have decided, I'm going to go ahead and sacrifice a lamb and I'm going to roast it, just like the Bible says. And the thing blows up. I mean, it blows up because of the grasses still in the stomach. They didn't clean it properly. You have to really take out the entrails, clean out the grasses, put the entrails back. Otherwise, you're going to have an explosion because the fire heats the things up and methane gas will cause an explosion. So, you know, not a good thing to just be going, oh, I'm going to do it this way, you know. Well, there's more to it than just this. But to have the timing, to know when it should be done, to know these things, it's critical for us today. So, but in verse 10, "And you shall not leave any of it until morning," or bulkur. "But whatever is left of it until morning," bulkur, "you shall burn with fire." So the morning, when the sun rises, they had a word for it, bulkur. So, you know, from the time of Binha Arbiim, you get into Layla, and then Layla throughout until bulkur, you have the timing here. And verse 11, "Now you shall eat it in this manner, with your loins girded, with your sandals on your feet, your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is Yahweh's Passover." Notice it doesn't say the Jews' Passover, Israel's Passover, Joe's Passover, Bill's Passover. It was Yahweh's Passover. Very clear. Now verse 12, "For I will go through the land of Egypt on that night." So starting, I guess we could say starting the 14th of that night. "And will strike down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the mighty ones of Egypt," all those deities. "And I will execute judgments. I am Yahweh." So here's another point in Exodus 12 where night is. You could also look at verse 30, "Pharaoh rose in the night." Verse 31, "And he called for Moses and Aaron at night." Layla is the Hebrew. Notice verse 29. There's another word attached to Layla, and it is a word meaning like midpoint. But it says in this translation, "Now it came about at midnight that Yahweh struck all the firstborn in the land." So it was a precise time. And the death angel went through, would have seen the blood, would have passed through and over, you know, would have gone past those Goshen there that had, and any in Egypt as well, that would have had the blood up on the lintels, or on the doorposts there. But in verse 13, Exodus 12, says, "The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you live, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt." And last time we talked, we mentioned that Passover can mean like the protection, can refer to the lamb, can refer to the service, a number of things that the Passover can represent. But here, the passing over, the death is passing over. So those that had the blood and relied on Yahweh, they would not have had death in their house. Verse 14, "Now this day shall be a memorial to you, and you shall celebrate it as a feast." Now this is this translation. "You shall celebrate it as a feast to Yahweh throughout your generations. You are to celebrate it as a permanent ordinance." Now there are those that will say, well, this is wording a shag here, and it's not only shag, but in celebrate here, it's shagag. probably not pronouncing that as accurately as I could, but it's said that that is a like a sojourning feast, and that in the shag is a feast. Well, we don't find that. We find that this is a victim. This is a sacrifice. And the word celebrate, which is translated here, it may be keep in the King James. I know that there's another location in the same chapter, but in verses 47 through, 47 and 48, it says, all the congregation of Israel are to celebrate this. But if a stranger sojourns with you and celebrates the Passover to Yahweh, let all the males be circumcised, and let him come near to celebrate it. So the word celebrate is used three times here. Now it's a different word, but the New American Standard translates it as celebrate. The word is asah. It's Strong's 62-13, and it can mean to do, to observe, to keep, perform. When we look at Aramaic words, Hebrew words, you can find a blending, depending on context. And shagag here means keep in this verse, as best as I can see. So, depending on the context, and it's not just here that could be translated keep. There's some other scriptures. I was looking through a resource that shows all the scriptures where this is, and some translators will translate it keep, depending on context. Well, depending on context, I mean, when we look at it here, it should have been written as keep, and the feast should be like victim or sacrifice. So we could read it as, in verse 14, now this day shall be a memorial to you, you shall keep it as a sacrifice to Yahweh. That's how it should read. And this is looking at the overall picture and putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And I just bring it out because there are those that will say, well, this means this. And, well, depending on the context, I mean, when we see this lamb, it's a victim. It's a sacrifice. It's not a feast in the sense it's something to be celebrated. This is no celebration that was going on here. It was a bit of a funeral, in a sense. It was a sobering time, a somber time. Now, one thing that I've done in the past, and I just did it here in this section because I hadn't done it before, but in a number of other sections like Leviticus 23, and this is something that you can do, and the reason I'm mentioning it is you can put a line through the particular verses, or not through the verses, but dividing where it may say, refer to like the Feast of Weeks. You can put lines on both sides where it starts and where it ends. And then where it ends, you should have, for example, another feast appearing. Now here, Passover is talked about up until the end of the 14th. At the end, and interestingly, that's just the way it happens here in this particular version. But and I guess it would be in yours as well. They break these up with a similar chapter and verses. But in Exodus 12 and verse 15, interestingly enough, it starts talking about days of unleavened bread. There's a dividing line there, and you go down. It's always talking that the Feast of Unleavened Bread is 7 days. Just to point out, like verse 19, 7 days there shall be no leavened bread found in your houses. Verse 18, in the first month on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. Does that time out correctly? It does when you look at it in context. If you count at the end of the 14th, you have the 15th, the 16th, the 17th, the 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st, 7 days. It counts out accurately, but again, you'll have some that will say, well, this doesn't make sense. This is 8 days because you're supposed to count at the beginning of the... I don't mean to make them sound silly, but in a sense it is silly to be saying the Feast of Unleavened Bread is an eight-day feast. Scripture doesn't bear that out. And we want to go with the Scripture, not tradition. And there are a number of scholars out there that say, look, the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, were originally two separate times. Okay? They recognize, a number of the scholars do, that there was a combining and that things started to happen to where they started keeping the Passover at the end of the 14th, which takes them into the 15th, and then they just kept the whole thing as the Feast of Passover. And that's even found in the New Testament. And we'll look at that later. I do think that we should probably go over the New Testament Passover. So I'm going to be trying to plan for that later. But in Exodus 12, we find a definite separation of Passover from Days of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And you find that separation here, like from the chapter 12, 15 through the 20th. So verse 21 starts again talking about the Passover. But the section between Exodus 12, 15 through 20 is unleavened bread. And you can do this with a number of sections. I did it with Numbers 28. I did it with Leviticus chapter 23. Even did it with the commandments. You can put a line and make sure that the first commandments are second, third, fourth, fifth, all the way through 10. It's just a way of having it in your Bible so you can open up quickly and see right away where you're at on these things. We can talk a little bit about Feast of Unleavened Bread here. In verse 15, it's been brought up that, well, you know, we should take out any yeast or unleavened bread the first day of unleavened bread. We don't find that is correct. When you look at verse 15 here and the wording, again, going back to a word like what we find here, which is translated first, it's actually, the word is Rishon, Strong 7223. It can mean first or former. Previous. It's like the Greek word protos. It can mean first or former. In verse 15 here it says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, but on the first day, on the previous day, is really what should be said here. Former, previous, the previous day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats anything leavened from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. How important was this? Now, this word is used throughout here a couple different times, from the first day until the seventh day, on verse 16, on the first day. That is Rishon. But the first time it's used here, it's actually meaning previous. It would be best translated as previous. So the previous day you shall remove leaven from your houses. Just a little aside, but that's where getting into some of the language and understanding what certain words mean, what they can mean in context, is really helpful. But let's move on to verse 21. Then Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said to them, go and take for yourselves lambs according to the families and slay the Passover lamb. You shall take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood, which is in the basin, and apply some of the blood that is in the basin, the lintel, and the two doorposts. And none of you shall go outside the door of his house until morning, till Bokhur. For Yahweh will pass through and smite the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood on the lintel and the two doorposts, Yahweh will pass over the door and will not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to smite you. And So this angel, or this force, is called a destroying force, the destroyer. Then verse 24, and you shall observe this event as an ordinance for you and your children forever. It will come about when you enter the land which Yahweh your Elohim has given, as he has promised, that you shall observe this rite. And it will come about when your children will say to you, what does this rite mean to you? And you shall say, it is the Passover sacrifice to Yahweh who passed over the houses of the sons of Israel in Egypt when he smote the Egyptians, but spared our homes. And the people bowed low and worshipped. Then the sons of Israel went and did so, just as Yahweh commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. So we find that this, in a sense, kind of blends here. It's not in a chronological order from the very first verse, but it's being reiterated here. Moses called the elders, told them to do the same thing as for the others. But here in verse 29, it says, now it came about at midnight, and that's a correct translation there. But at midnight, that Yahweh struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of the Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the cattle. Very severe, very severe plague. Verse 30, Pharaoh rose in the night and said, he and all of his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, and there was no home where there was not someone dead. I mean, it was prevalent. Verse 31, then he called for Moses and Aaron at night and said, rise up, get out from among my people, both you and the sons of Israel, and go worship Yahweh as you've said. Take both your flocks and your herds as you have said, and go and bless me also. The Egyptians urged the people to send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we shall all be dead. So they were terrified. You know, what was next? The complete destruction. I mean, what else could be next after all these plagues? But we notice that Israel really became a nation at this time, that they were separate, truly separate from Egypt. And when we come out of Egypt, symbolically, I mean, we become part of the family. We're a part of Israel in a sense, with our elder brother being actually a Jew, a part of the tribes of Israel. In verse 34, so the people took their dough before it was leavened with the kneading bowls bound up in the clothes and on their shoulders. Now the sons of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, for they had requested from the Egyptians articles of silver and articles of gold, articles of clothing, and Yahweh had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians so that they let them have their request. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. So this is quite the event that was going on. And it would have taken time. You have the elderly, you have the children, you have the cattle, the animals that were with the Israelites. You have the belongings being given to them. And the estimates are that this was a large amount of people. Look at verse 37. Now the sons of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot besides children. Besides children, besides women, besides the animals, besides the belongings, all of this would have been going forth. Now you take that amount and move it, it's not going to move that fast. I mean, it can only move so fast. Now we know that from the beginning of the 14th, you went into the night, and the Layla, and specifically midnight, now you've got a number of hours to go still, but you know, how far will they get? In verse 38 says, a mixed multitude also went up with him, so along with flocks and herds, a very large number of livestock. How many? I'm not sure, but it says a very large number of livestock. So the emphasis is there that it was quite a bit. I guess we should move forward here. Verse 39, they baked the dough which they had brought out of Egypt into cakes of unleavened bread, for it had not become leavened since they were driven out of Egypt, and they could not delay, nor had they prepared any provisions for themselves. Now the time that the sons of Israel lived in Egypt was 430 years. It came about at the end of the 430 years to the very day, and all the host of Yahweh went out from the land of Egypt. That all the host of Yahweh went out from Egypt. Now, this is interesting because if we go back, it says to the very day. What does that mean, to the very day? Go back to Genesis 15 and verse 17. Genesis 15, you find the cutting of the covenant. Genesis 15 and verse 17. Actually, let's back up to verse 12 of Genesis 15. You can actually back up a little bit to get the overall gist of this. Verse 8, Abram asked Yahweh, because Abram was just promised some things here. And he said to Yahweh Elohim, how may I know that I shall possess it? You know, possess these things. He's going to be made into a great nation. In verse 4 of 15, it says, the word of Yahweh came to him, saying, this man shall not be your heir, but the one who shall come forth from your body, he shall be your heir. And verse 7, and he said to him, I am Yahweh who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees to give you this land to possess it. And then the question comes, how shall I possess it? Verse 9, so he said to him, bring me a three-year-old heifer, three-year-old female goat, three-year-old ram, turtle dove, young pigeon. And he goes on here. Verse 12, now when the sun was going down, now I looked up that word, and that was the word there is bow, and this surprised me, because it talks in verse 17, it says, when the sun had set, it was very dark. That the word set there is also bow. So bow is used in both of these instances, but it emphasizes the time that the sun was going down. I mean, when we look at this, we can actually look at the timing of Yahshua's death when he had been killed, and it looks similar to what we have here, in that the sacrifice was set up before, you could say afternoon, but it was set up before the night fell. It says in verse 18, on that day Yahweh made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I have given this land from the Egypt, river of Egypt, as far as the great river, the river of Euphrates. I do think this ties into what we have here in Exodus 12, verse 40 and 41, where it says, the time that the sons of Israel lived in Egypt was 430 years. Now it says back in, I think it's Genesis 15. That must be another location. But there's a 500-year time that was that had been passed. But we find here in verse 41, I think the 400 is mentioned as just a general number. Here it says 430 years. But in verse 41, it says, it came about at the end of the 430 years to the very day that all the hosts of Yahweh went out from the land of Egypt. So all this procession that's moving forward takes time to go from where they're going to, from land of Goshen into Ramesses, and then out of Ramesses to Sukkoth, where they're going. Sukkoth is about 20 miles outside of Ramesses, so they would have had a bit of walk going there. But to get to from where they were into Ramesses and then heading out, It took some time. That's the point that I was wanting to make here. Verse 43, Yahweh said to Moses and Aaron, "This is the ordinance of the Passover. No foreigner is to eat of it, but every man's slave purchased with money after you have circumcised him, then he may eat of it. A sojourner or a hired servant shall not eat of it. It is to be eaten in a single house. You're not to bring forth any of the flesh outside of the house, nor are you to break any bone of it. All the congregation of Israel are to celebrate this, or to keep it." It would be a better translation. 48, "But if a stranger sojourns with you and keeps the Passover to Yahweh, let all his males be circumcised, and then let him come near to celebrate it, or to keep it, and he shall be like a native of the land, but no uncircumcised person may eat of it." Now this is in part why we don't allow unbaptized members to actually partake of the emblems, the unleavened bread and the fruit of the vine, which we see emphasized even by Paul in the New Testament. I mean, those are the two things he quotes when he's basically chastising those in Corinth there. He emphasizes the emblems. And we do emphasize those, and we also do a foot washing. But again, we can talk about that later. And in verse 49, it says, "The same law shall apply to the native as to the stranger who sojourns among you." Then all the sons of Israel did so, just as they, just as Yahweh had commanded Moses and Aaron. It came about on that same day that Yahweh brought forth the sons of Israel on out of the land of Egypt by their hosts. When would that have been? It had to have been at the end of the 14th, going into the 15th. And as they left, they would have been into the 15th. We can take a look at Numbers 33. Get some more clarification on this. Numbers 33 and verse 3. And it says, "And they journeyed from Ramesses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month on the next day after the Passover." So there's a clear distinction here from Passover, which is on the 14th, to when they actually, the tail end of them went out from Egypt, which would have been on the 15th. The sunset had occurred, but they had some time during the day, and of course we find, like Deuteronomy 16:1, says that they went out by night. We know it wasn't during the day, during the light part of the day. But it says, "They journeyed from Ramesses in the first month on the 15th day. At the first month on the next day after the Passover, the sons of Israel started out boldly in the sight of all the Egyptians." Now, how could it be in the sight of all the Egyptians if it was at night? It was the 15th. What happens on the 15th? Full moon. It would have given enough light for all of them to be seen and for them to have sure footing as they went out. So Yahweh had this all planned out. He knew exactly what he was doing. And you know, he's to be praised, because it was quite the exit that they made out of Egypt. Let's go back to Exodus 12. And rather, actually, let's go over to Numbers 28. Again, emphasizing the 14th versus the 15th, we find Numbers chapter 28 in verse 16. And here I have a line after the verse 16 ends and where 17 starts. There's a line between there because it's separating. I went ahead and marked it, but you can see clearly that there is a separation here. Verse 16, Numbers 28. "Then on the 14th day of the first month shall be Yahweh's Passover." Verse 17. "On the 15th day of this month shall be a feast of unleavened bread, and shall be eaten for 7 days." The separation is there. The 14th is separate from the 15th. The 15th is separate from the 14th. You can't combine them and say you've got a feast of Passover. That's what some are saying, and that's not correct. That's tradition. We want to stay with what Yahweh's word says. But there's some other things here. This unleavened bread is talked about from 17 going all the way down to the 25th, verse 25, I should say. And then, actually I have another line through there, and then the 26 starts talking about the Feast of Weeks. So you can do this with your own Bible and be able to open up to certain sections and clearly see right away, if you put the line through there and then highlight, you know, if it be Passover, you highlight Passover. Feast of Unleavened Bread, you highlight that. The line between the two is clearly visible. And then going on, Feast of Weeks, Trumpets, Atonement, these type of things. The Passover, we find, is very important. So important that Yahweh actually gives a second day for it to be kept. If you would, turn over to Numbers 9, and starting there in verse 10. Numbers chapter 9 and verse 10. Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, if any one of you or of your generations becomes unclean because of a dead person or is on a distant journey, he may, however, observe the Passover to Yahweh. How? Verse 11, in the second month, on the 14th day, at twilight, at Ben Ha Arbim. And we've already established when that is. The scriptures establishes when that is. But it's at that time that they shall observe it. They shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Now, you also find in verse 2 of chapter 9, now let the sons of Israel observe the Passover at its appointed time. When is that? It's in the spring. It's at the beginning of the year on the 14th day. Verse 3, on the 14th day of this month, again at Ben Ha Arbim, translated here as twilight, you shall observe it at its appointed time. It's Moedim, or Moed. You shall observe it according to all of its statutes, according to all of its ordinances. How is that done? The instructions are given. It's all to be done on the 14th. There's no scripture saying, you know what, if you don't get all of it done at the beginning of the 14th, going into midnight, you know, forget it. Forget about burning the rest of it at Bokur in the morning. Just go ahead and take it into the next day. It doesn't say that. And so we can't do that either. When it comes to the timing, we can't do that. It's the 14th versus the 15th. Just as for unleavened bread, it's the 15th versus the 14th. 14th is Passover. But it says in verse 4, so Moses told the sons of Israel to observe Passover. How do you observe it? However Yahweh tells you to observe it, that's how it's done. Verse 5, they observe the Passover in the month, or in the first month, on the 14th day of the month at Ben Ha Arbim. Again, emphasized. You have plenty of witnesses testifying to the fact that it's Ben Ha Arbim. But again, when you look into Strong's, which I did today and made a mistake and thought, because it happened for, I was looking at Numbers 9, verse 11. I was looking in Strong's like a dummy and ended up finding a Reb. And I wrote a Reb down. And then it dawned on me, whoops, that's not a Reb. That's Ben Ha Arbim. It's a different time period. And knowing when that time period is very helpful in determining when the Passover is to be done. And it also clarifies for us that Passover is on the 14th. It can't be on the 15th. The Feast of Unleavened Bread starts on the 15th. 7 days. So when you get into the section of Exodus 12 here, starting in verse 15. They knew that they had to have the leaven out even before the first day, prior to the first day, because if any leaven was found from the first day, the 15th, through the 21st, forget it. You're going to be cut off from Israel. It was that serious. Verse 16, on the first day you shall have a holy assembly, and another assembly on the seventh day. No work at all shall be done on them. Now, it's been pointed out that when the Israelites left Egypt, they went out of Ramesses into Sukkot on the 15th. Isn't that work? Well, we know that Scripture tells us in the New Testament that basically if you have an ox in the ditch, pull it out. Save it. And that's exactly what Yahweh did with the children of Israel. He saved them. And He saved us when He pulled us out of Egypt. And He tells us to honor Him and to love Him and to do these things that are pleasing to Him. And when He gives us appointed times to keep, we are to keep them at their appointed times. So, you know, these things are very important for us. In verse 17, you shall also observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this day I brought you out of the host of the land of Egypt. Again, they went out basically on the 15th. It was at the end of the 14th, but then it got into the 15th. So technically, the 15th. And I brought your host out of the land of Egypt. Therefore, you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a permanent ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. 7 days there shall be no leaven found in your houses. For whoever eats what is leaven, that person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is an alien or a native of the land. You shall not eat anything leavened in all your dwellings. You shall eat unleavened bread. And so this was all done at this time. We find that they were to keep the Passover in their own houses. When we find, when we start to look at the changes, well, let's look at Deuteronomy 16. Starting in verse 1, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to Yahweh your Elohim, for in the month of Abib, Yahweh your Elohim brought you out of Egypt by night. Again, the end of the 14th, end of the 15th. You shall sacrifice the Passover to Yahweh your Elohim from the flock and herd in the place where Yahweh chooses to establish His name. Now this is different. This is different than doing it in the house, in your own house. If you go down to verse 6, it's emphasized again, at the place where Yahweh, your Elohim, chooses to establish His name, you shall sacrifice a Passover in the evening, at sunset, at the time that you came out of Egypt. And of course, they were told to leave in the 14th. So you have to consider some of these things. It is a bit of a juggle at times, but when you put the pieces together, you get a clear picture of what's going on, and you can definitely pinpoint what these particular verses are actually saying. But here is another section in where the days of unleavened bread are basically talked about in chapter 8. Now it does, the wording is a little different here. It says, 6 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the seventh day, there shall be a solemn assembly to Yahweh your Elohim. And it's interesting, it's just this small section. Pentecost from 9 through 12. And then you have the Feast of Tabernacles talked about going on from verse 13 there. So again, the lines, if you were to draw a line between them, you could see them a little bit more clearly and more readily. But in reading through this, in verse, going back up to verse 3, you shall not eat leavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat with it unleavened bread. Now that can be kind of confusing. what we find here is Passover is being talked about, and when it says, you'll notice the words, with it, unleavened bread, shall not eat leavened bread with it, going very first part of three, you shall not eat leavened bread with it, that's the Passover, and then, period, capital S, 7 days you shall eat with it, that is Passover, in addition to it is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Bread of affliction, for you came out of the land in Egypt in haste, in order that you may remember all the days of your life, the days when you came out of the land of Egypt. For 7 days no leaven shall be seen with you in your territory, and none of the flesh. Your sacrifice in the evening, they shall remain overnight until morning. You are not allowed to sacrifice Passover in any of your towns, which Yahweh your Elohim is giving you. Again, another change that's going into something a little different. Now, Deuteronomy 16 has been pointed to, and Ezra, of all people, has been accused of messing with Deuteronomy a little bit, particularly this area, because it seems less clear than we find in other areas. And there's some other reasoning behind that. But, you know, when we look at Ezra, the scribe, he was there when Judah came back out of, at least part of Judah, came back out of Babylon. It's theorized that he wrote this and put together and then, but fudged it a little bit. I don't think so, because Ezra's character, from what we see, is good. So there shouldn't be any question there. But some of the things we find with the Passover is that it is at a certain time. It is to be kept a certain way. There is a change. There are some changes here. We'll look at some further changes later. But the Passover is something very important to Yahweh. So important that there was another time that you could keep it, 1 month later. So the next new moon that would show after the first one, 14 days after it, would allow another Passover to be taken. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you'd want to take unleavened bread again. The command is just for Passover. You find there in Numbers 9. But that's all I have for you today. Hopefully I haven't made it too confusing. It is a difficult subject matter at times, especially when you go into resources and the resources aren't even telling you the truth. So be careful and be aware. But may Yahweh bless as well as we study His Word and go through the coming Passover.